Welcome to Coffin Cast episode 11. My name is Kristen. Holy cow, what are we doing? It's a Monday. You can't release on a Monday, you release on Fridays. Well, you bet your sweet ass I'm releasing on a Monday. Here we are. Why am I doing that? I'm doing it because I want to see if I get more listens if I release on a Monday. Just for fun. Before I get into the also, I got 4 listens over the weekend. That's unprecedented for me. Usually I get 0 listens until about Tuesday or Wednesday, and then it starts picking up. But I got 4 over the weekend. Thank you for that, all 4 people, all 4 of you. You're beautiful, and I love you. So, what's the other reason, you may ask? I was so into this week's episode, guys. I had a moment where I was like, I have literally no idea what I'm doing this week. Am I out of ideas? Is the podcast over? And then something, like I said on Twitter, literally punched me in the face, and I'm like, that's what I'm doing this week, and it's gonna be amazing. And as I was writing it, I realized it was amazing. So what are we doing this week, you may wonder, that got me so into it and what inspired me to release on a Monday and be done within a couple days when I'm usually sliding into home at the last minute? I'll tell ya. So again, thank you, Mental Floss, because like the first episode, how I got a story out of a comment, I basically was just doing the Facebook thing, as one does, looking at memes and GIFs and whatever you do, or GIFs, whatever your bag is on that. And I came across a Mental Floss article, the story behind your favorite songs. Most of it was stupid, innocuous stuff like mbop, and learning that mbop is actually a measure of time, because it's gone in a mbop. Whatever the hell that means. Still a stupid song. But I came across a song I knew, and I knew it had a backstory to it, but I didn't realize how dark and kind of sinister the story felt, and it changes the whole meaning of the song. And I was like, crap, I'm gonna look into that more. So I look into it more, and it's so much deeper than that. And it makes the song so much better, I think, in the long run. So it just, at first I was like, maybe I could just do the whole episode on that song. And then I'm like, wait a second. Hold up a minute, Kristen. There's probably other songs out there that have either a mystery tied to them or a crime tied to them or something. And it... Google just opened up this whole world for me of songs that were based on either mysteries or true crimes. So here we are. This episode is going to be songs that are based on true mysteries. We'll go with mysteries because they're not all crimes. So before we get into all that, let's talk about some stuff. There's some news on the Coffin Cast front. I am now available on Podbean. So you can hear me there. I was a hustler this weekend. I tell ya, I was going to everywhere you can hear podcasts, and I was submitting left and right. I'm pending right now with Stitcher and Pandora, which if I can get on either of those, that would be amazing. But also, and this is the holy grail that has been a thorn in my side for the 2 months that I've been doing this podcast, I have finally gotten word back from Apple. I pressed them yet again, and I'm like, pressed an apple to make juice, whatever. I don't know, that was stupid. Don't listen to me. I finally was like, please help me. I have been trying to do this for months now, and nobody will give me any answers. You guys send me back to Anchor. Anchor sends me back to you. Just help me, please. And finally somebody did. Thank you, Jasmine and Apple. You're wonderful. I doubt you're listening to this, but if you are, you're the best person in the world, and I love you. She said that it was marked as clean. My podcast was marked as clean, but it has explicit material. I don't swear a lot, but I guess explicit can mean, you know, I'm talking about crime. I'm talking about death. I get it. So I changed the to an explicit title and then made sure that it was in my RSS feed, and then I submitted it back to them. And good news, I'm still waiting. They're going to get back to me today, though. I'm confident they're going to get back to me today. So hopefully we hear back, and then I can be on Apple Podcasts and I can be rated. But in the meantime, in other news, go to podchaser.com, because Podchaser is like an IMDb for podcasts. You can see who's behind your favorite podcasts. Also, you can rate. I need some ratings. I've got 3 ratings for 5 stars, so thank you to the people that have done that. I believe it's fellow podcasters, because we are, like I said, such a supportive group of people. Especially the guys from Bring On the Weird. Thank you guys for supporting me. And also Whispers in the Night, thank you for supporting me. I appreciate it. Listen to both those podcasts, Bring On the Weird and Whispers in the Night. Both great podcasts, great people behind them. Listen to those. But also on Podchaser, you can rate people, you can give them feedback. I would love 5-star ratings across the board, would be amazing for me. But also constructive feedback's good too. Don't be mean, of course. Don't say your voice is stupid and you sound like an idiot. But say, hey, you know, if you do this, it might sound better. Or, hey, can you do this in an episode? Or what have you? Because that stuff helps me. And it makes a more interesting podcast for you. But also on Podchaser, you can look at lists of different things that you might be interested in, like audio dramas or political podcasts, podcasts by women, things like that. You can definitely find a new podcast. And you can also see my ugly mug on there, because like I said, it's an IMDb, so I'm on there as a creator. You can see my ugly face. You can see I'm on there as an editor, producer, and host of this podcast, because I do it all by my lonesome. But you can see who's behind your other favorite podcasts as well. And you can see what podcasts I listen to. I have a list going. Some of the podcasts I listen to are not on there as of right now, but they will be, because this is kind of a new website, but it's so cool. I can't wait till they get an app. I would love to have this in an app. But yeah, go to podchaser.com. It's great. It's fun. I'm enjoying it. I check it like religiously, because I'm like, did somebody else rate me? No. Did somebody else rate me yet? No. So, but you can follow me on there too. And you can listen to the podcast there as well. So, podchaser.com. Now let's get into this week's episode, shall we? Because we're like 8 minutes in and we haven't talked about the episode. So, there's tons of songs out there, like I said, that are related to mysteries and crimes. And some pretty well-known songs that are related to such things. So, what are we covering today? We're covering 4 songs. I'm sticking within kind of the rock / pop realm. Kind of in the 90s and 80s. I will probably do more once more come across my periphery. Maybe venture into different categories like rap or, I don't know what else. Death metal? I don't know. But like I said, pop, rock, 80s, 90s. So the first song we're going to talk about is Polly by Nirvana. Next song is I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. Suffer Little Children by the Smiths. And lastly, the song that inspired me to do this whole thing, The Way by Fastball. So most of these, like I said, are based on true crimes, but the last one is kind of a mystery. So let's go ahead and jump into Polly by Nirvana. So before I begin, I wanted to say that at the beginning of each segment, I wanted to play a little bit of each song. There's an option on Anchor to do that, but for some reason I'm not allowed to. I don't know if it's due to the sponsorship, like I can't make any money off somebody else's song, which I understand. So I have a workaround that I will share at the end of this episode in the closing, so stay tuned for that. But first, let's go ahead and jump into Polly. Polly was on Nirvana's breakout album, Nevermind. They had previous albums, but if we're honest, Nevermind was their first big album. And it tells the story of a kidnapped girl from the perspective of the kidnapper. So the song caught a little bit of flack once it started getting more popular after, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit was out and people were actually listening to the album. It got the details of the particular story that it's based on pretty wrong. Also, it's from the view of a kidnapper. So, I mean, that's a little, I don't know, cringy. It's a good song, though. It's pretty much a classic now, I'd say. I mean, as far as rock goes, it's a classic rock song now. But at the time, it got a little bit of flack. How Kurt Cobain decided to write the song is he came across a news article in 1987, just kind of a blurb about how this kidnapped girl escaped from her kidnapper and was found safe, and he was inspired to write based on that article. It's based on Gerald Friend and his attack on an unnamed 14-year-old girl who he offered a ride home from a rock concert in 1987. So let's talk about Gerald Friend for a moment, who he was, because there's some interest there. I mean, not some interest, I mean there's some history with this dude. So, prior to the 1987 incident, he had been arrested and convicted of the rape and torture of a 12-year-old girl in 1962. He offered her and her brother a ride home. They were just walking alongside the road, and he goes, "Hey, let me give you a ride home." He forced her brother out of the car at gunpoint, and then he took her to Mount Rainier National Park and tied her up and tortured her and raped her for several hours and beat her. And then she ended up escaping in a river and was found by a passerby. He ran, of course, and was caught by his father, and he pulled the gun on his father and was going to shoot his father, but there was a struggle, and Gerald ended up getting shot, not mortally wounded or anything, but his father turned him into police, and he was sentenced to 75 years in prison. So while he was in prison, he had several escape attempts, and they still paroled him in 20 years. 75 years, 20 years, what's the difference, right? I mean, and the guy wasn't a model prisoner, obviously, because he tried to escape several times, but they still let him out. So, cut to about 7 or so years later, give or take, and Friend picked up a 14-year-old girl from a rock concert and offered her a ride home. Instead of driving her to her home, he drove her to his mobile home, where he tied her to a pulley suspended from the ceiling. He raped her repeatedly and tortured her, and she ended up escaping by jumping from his truck when they were stopped at a gas station. He was arrested the next day when a police officer recognized him at a traffic stop. He was ordered to serve the remainder of his 1962 sentence for 75 years, so it was, what, So 45 years, 55, oh my god, Kristen, it's a Monday morning, guys, my math is not good on any day or time, but it's really bad Monday mornings, I guess. He was ordered to serve the 55 years that he missed out on with the first sentence, and then he was given an additional 75 years. So he's not getting out of prison anytime soon. He is still alive. It should also be noted that for a very long time, he was considered to possibly be a suspect in the Green River killings that Gary Ridgway was later on found guilty of. So that bears some weight there, but they think he was connected to a couple other murders or a couple murders, because the other two escaped him, but they think he might be connected to a couple murders, but they haven't been able to prove it. So let's move on to I Don't Like Mondays by the Boomtown Rats. Alright, let's jump into I Don't Like Mondays. Today is a Monday. Fitting. I don't like Mondays, but this song is such a pretty song. I love this song so much. It's not totally on the nose, but you kind of get that it's about something serious as lyrics go on. It's symphonic, it's epic, it's a sweeping song. It has symphony, it has piano, choir, harmonies. It's a pretty epic song. And it's just a good song. I've loved this song since I've heard it. I kind of always knew the story behind it a little bit. Because it's just, like, even the title's just kind of, like, what? I Don't Like Mondays? That's kind of a weird name for a song. Anyway, so Sir Bob Geldof, Robert Geldof, whatever he goes by, he's synonymous with charity and big epic concerts. You know, Live Aid was attributed to him and all that good stuff. So before that, he was a lead singer in a band called the Boomtown Rats. On January 29th, 1979, he was at Georgia State University at their college radio station, and he was being interviewed. And the telex machine next to him, which is, the telex machine is basically a fancy way of saying a fax machine, but it's for news bulletins, things like that, came in, and he turned to look at it, and he saw that a girl in San Diego had opened fire on an elementary school playground. This is basically the first school shooting ever. So let's go back to that morning, January 29th, 1979. Brenda Spencer was 16 years old and lived across the street from Grover Cleveland Elementary School with her father. Her parents had separated, and she lived with him in poverty, sharing a single mattress on their living room floor. Her father was an alcoholic, it seemed. It was not a good existence for Brenda. She was a troubled girl, naturally, when you're going through things like that. She excelled in photography, but basically in school she didn't do very well. She was arrested for shooting out the windows at the elementary school with a BB gun. Her parole officer told her father, you know, she's very depressed. She's going through something. I think she's suicidal. She needs to be institutionalized, like, now. Her father basically blew it off and said, no, I do not give permission for her to be hospitalized, so... That year for Christmas, he decided to get her a Ruger 10/22 semi-automatic 22 caliber rifle with telescopic sight and 500 rounds of ammunition. Let's give that to a suicidal girl. That makes sense. Spencer later said, quote, I asked for a radio and he bought me a gun. When asked why he might have done that, she answered, I felt like he wanted me to kill myself. So, not to have sympathy for the monster in this case, but you kind of... It was a perfect storm for this to happen. So on the morning of January 29th, she began opening fire on children that were waiting for their principal, Burton Ragg, to open the school gates. This was a Monday morning. Kids were waiting to get into school. She shot and killed the principal as he was trying to save the students, and shot and killed a custodian who was shielding one of the injured children. 8 children and 1 police officer were injured. 2 people were killed. Police ended up blocking the school with a garbage truck, which ended up saving countless lives. And when there was a reporter who was just dialing numbers in the area trying to get the shooter. It's like, why aren't, you know, let police do that. Don't. News reporting was different back then, I guess. I guess not. I don't know. But they finally got a hold of her. And he asked her why she was doing this, and she said, simply, I don't like Mondays. This livens up the day. So, hence the name of the song, I Don't Like Mondays. She was eventually coaxed out of her home by the promise of Burger King. And she was sentenced to 25 years to life and is currently serving at the California Institute for Women in Chico. So later on, you know, the song, at first, you know, it was just a good song, but then people started to get the meaning behind it. So they got some flack, naturally, for basically making this girl famous. He ended up saying, you know, just to kind of give Bob Geldof's side of things, he said, I was doing a radio interview in Atlanta, and there was a telex machine beside me. I read it as it came out. Not liking Mondays as a reason for doing somebody in is a bit strange. I was thinking about it on the way back to the hotel, and I just said, silicon chip inside her head. We say silicon. In the song, it's silicon. So I'm going to say it the way they do. Silicon chip inside her head had switched to overload, and I wrote that down. And the journalist interviewing her said, tell me why. It was such a senseless act. It was the perfect senseless act, and this was the perfect senseless reason for doing it. So perhaps I wrote the perfect senseless song to illustrate it. It wasn't an attempt to exploit tragedy. So that's that story. So now we're going to stick with the 80s and go to the song Suffer Little Children by the Smiths. Moving on to Suffer Little Children. So this song is by the Smiths. Whatever your feelings on Morrissey, put them aside for now. I love his music. I don't love his persona, but I'm a big fan of the Smiths and his music, but he's kind of an a-hole, let's be honest. So anyway, Suffer Little Children. The title of the song comes from a Bible quote, a Bible story where, you know, the disciples cast out some children that were trying to worship, and Jesus was like, suffer the little children, meaning deal with them, let them be here, because this is what this is all about. But, you know, Morrissey played upon the words and took out the word, I don't know how to say that gracefully, so, it just became Suffer Little Children. Morrissey was inspired to write the song after reading a book on the Moors murders in England. It happened in Manchester, which is where he's from the years 1963 to 1965. These murders were perpetrated by Myra Henley and Ian Brady. I have watched a lot, read a lot about these two. Whew! It's still a sore spot for Britain, I want to say, because the victims were kids. I mean, primarily young kids, but then there were some teenagers also. The song got some pretty bad reception based on the fact that it's still such a sore spot for Britain. The song itself names three of the victims by name. Leslie Ann, with your pretty beads. John, you will never be a man. Edward, see those alluring lights. So it was Edward Evans, John Kilbride, and Leslie Ann Downey. At the time, excuse me. Whoa, where did that come from? At the time the song was released in 1984, those were the only three murders that were attributed to Myra Henley and Ian Brady. In 1985, there were more. Pauline Reed and Kenneth Bennett. I believe there's more. I think there's more somewhere out there. But for the sake of the song, because we're just covering the song mainly and how it relates, we're just going to cover those three deaths, as it were. So the first of the children was John Kilbride. Myra lured John, who was 12 years old at the time, to her car, by saying, oh, your mother would be so concerned that you're out this late. Let's get you home. And she also said, I'll give you a bottle of sherry. Just come on, let's get you home. Sherry's alcohol, of course. So 12-year-old boy's like, yeah, liquor, give me some. I mean, sherry's not a popular drink these days, I guess. But, you know, for a 12-year-old boy, it's like, ooh, I'm getting liquor. Awesome. So they lured him in that way. And then there was a story where that she would use quite often to get the kids on the moors. This was used in later victims that were found that weren't in the song. But she said, oh, I gotta stop here at the moors really quick. Can you help me find my lost glove? And he said, yeah, I'll help you. And then Ian Brady would show up. And according to Myra, he would sexually assault the kids by himself and then murder them, and she would help with the body. They were boyfriend and girlfriend. They were, I think, in their early 20s at that point. And she was basically just an accomplice. She had nothing to do with the murders. Ian Brady said that, no, she had a lot to do with the murders as well, and she joined in on some of the sexual assault as well. So whether that's true or not, who knows? We'll get into that with a later murder. But as of right now, what happened with John Kilbride is he was sexually assaulted and strangled. He was sexually assaulted and then they slit his throat. When that didn't kill him, they strangled him. And then they buried his body on the moors. The next victim, this one, because I've read and I've watched documentaries and I've watched a movie that was based on this, this particular one gets to me quite a bit. There's audio and photographic evidence of what was done to this little girl. I haven't heard the audio. I don't want to hear the audio. I don't want to hear any of it. I don't want to see any of it. But they talk about it in detail in this movie, this HBO movie called Longford. It's about his title was Earl of Longford. And he would visit Myra Henley. He was a very religious guy and he believed in forgiveness. She in her later life was more remorseful of what she did. Ian Brady was psychotic and terrible across the board. Myra Henley tried to make amends for what she did. And Ian Brady tried to turn Earl of Longford off Myra Henley by telling him, listen to this tape and you'll see what kind of woman she really is. Because it showed that she was involved in the sexual assaults and murders more than she admitted. But either way, let's talk about her. She was found, she was 10 years old at the time, and she was found by Myra and Ian at a fairground. She seemed to be by herself. She's a very sweet, trusting little girl. She was very cute, if you can see the pictures of her. She seemed to be by herself, and Myra gained her trust and said, hey, let's go find your mom. She was taken to their home, where she was photographed in lewd positions, and there was also audio recording of the sexual assault upon her, and as they killed her. Leslie Ann called for her mom. She cried mommy over and over again as this was happening to her. And Myra Henley laughed. You can hear that alluded to in the song. You hear a woman laughing in the background. And that's what they're alluding to, that laughter in the audio recording while she was murdering this little girl. She was strangled and buried within the moors as well. Sorry, that one's a little rough for me. So Edward Evans was 17 at the time of his murder. He was lured to the house with the promise of some pay because he was going to help Ian Brady move some bottles and sell some bottles. Somebody was coming to pick up the bottles to buy them. and reuse them. And Ian was like, I need some help. Hey, you look strong. I'll give you some money if you help me out with this. So they got him to the home. And Ian actually got Myra Henley's brother-in-law, David Smith, involved with this. He was looked down upon by the Henley family because he married her little sister. They were really young. And he was kind of a career criminal. Not a great guy. He assaulted people. Sorry. He wasn't a good guy. He was a criminal. He was a career criminal, essentially. So Ian thought he could trust him with helping him with this, but he got him there under the pretense that they were going to rob him. So David was also supposed to wait for the signal to come to the house and knock on the door and ask for those wine bottles. He was supposed to wait for a signal, flashing lights, which is the alluring lights that Edward was supposed to see in the song. So he waited, and this is a direct quote from David Smith, so I'm gonna do it as best I can. It's kind of disjointed, but this is a direct quote from David Smith, who later said, I waited about a minute or two, then I suddenly heard a hell of a scream. It sounded like a woman, really high pitched. Then the screams carried on, one after the other, really loud. Then I heard Myra shout, Dave, help him, very loud. When I ran in, I just stood inside the living room and I saw a young lad. He was laying with his head and his shoulders on the couch, his legs on the floor. He was facing upwards. Ian was standing over him, facing him, with his legs on either side of the young lad's legs. The lad was still screaming, and Ian had a hatchet in his hand, and he was holding it above his head. He hit the lad on the left side of his head with the hatchet. I heard the blow. It was a terrible, hard blow, and it sounded horrible. So that killed him. They ended up wrapping up his body and putting him in their spare bedroom and locking it. They were going to move the body that night to the moors to bury him, but it was too large for both of them. Too awkward for the both of them to carry. So David said, I'll return tomorrow with a baby pram and we should be able to move it. So what David Smith did instead is he told Myra Henley's sister what had happened. And he decided he was going to go to a payphone and call the police instead of coming back with a pram. This was not what he signed up for. He wasn't a murderer. So this was not what he signed up for. He said that he took with him a screwdriver to arm himself, and he walked to a payphone to call police. He was worried that Ian Brady was going to kill him before he could get to the police. He was scared. He's like, this guy is going to kill me if I don't do something. So the police showed up at the house, or the apartment rather, and They said that they were following up on reports of violence from the night before, some noises that neighbors had called in about, and Myra and Ian were like, no, nothing happened here. And he's like, well, is it all right if I just look around? And they're like, sure, because they had the room locked. A police officer isn't going to go into a locked room based on sounds, but they didn't know that David Smith had called the police. So the police officer goes to the locked room, and he goes, where's the key? And Myra's like, oh, I left it at work. Sorry. No big deal, though. There's nothing in there. And the police officer's like, well, I'll take you to your job, and you can pick it up, and we can just take a look. And she's like, no, that's okay. The police officer ended up breaking down the door and found the body of Edward Evans laying there. They tried to explain it off as they got into a fight. You know, it just got out of hand. He was trying to rob them. All sorts of different excuses. But then things started coming out. Myra started blaming Ian. Ian started blaming Myra. So that's how they were found out. So both of them were sentenced to I forgot what, sentenced to life in prison. Both of them have since died in prison. I think Ian Brady died last, no, 2017, I want to say he died. So semi-recent, but they're not going to be hurting anybody else anytime soon. They're dead. They're gone. Later on, the families of the victims initially spoke out against the song, but Morrissey ended up becoming friends with Leslie Ann Downey's mother after speaking with her and convincing her that the intentions of the song were completely honorable. He wasn't trying to capitalize on it. He was trying to bring attention to it because there were a lot of missing kids, and they wanted to find, and of course these families want to find closure. So the song itself, it's an eerie song. You can listen to it, but it's pretty on the nose and it's pretty unsettling. It's a very uncomfortable song to sit through. So now, last but not least, let's get to The Way by Fastball. Last but not least, let's talk The Way by Fastball. The song is an upbeat song. It's not a bad song. It's probably been overplayed to its detriment because it's at its core, it's a really good song. It's very upbeat. The song sounds like a story of a couple who escape their mundane lives to go have adventure on the open road. And the story behind it, it's a lot darker than that. It's very dark, in fact, and it's very sad. The song itself was named one of the best songs of the 90s. Rightfully so, I think. But when you get into the backstory of it, it's sad. It's a very sad story. So, for me, it's also a local story. I live in Austin. I grew up in Austin. I moved away when I was 12, so I wasn't living here at the time that this took place. I think I was a freshman in high school when this took place. I was living in California, but, you know, of course this song got everywhere. It wasn't just a local song, but Fastball's also from Austin, so that's kind of like local boys done right, but they also used a local story to make this major song. The story is about a Salado couple. Salado is about, I'd say, 30 to 45 minutes north of Austin, give or take. Probably a little bit more, I'd even say. Cute little town, artsy town. I've been there several times. It's a nice little place to spend a weekend if you've got nothing going on. But it's about Leela and Raymond Howard. They were an elderly couple that ended up getting married after both their first spouses died. They found each other late in life. Very much in love. They had several children between them. Every year, they would make a very short trip to Temple, Texas, which is about 15 minutes away from Salado, to go to the Pioneer Festival. This festival's just like a kind of bluegrass, folky festival, music festival. They did this every year since they'd been married. And this was about June 29th, 1997, that they were going to go to this festival. The couple, they were in their early 80s. They were starting to show signs of, you know, what happens when you get older. Your faculties start to go away. Things like that. Leela was beginning to show signs of Alzheimer's. She was forgetting things. For instance, she was supposed to meet a friend for coffee at 10 in the morning. She showed up at 10 at night and was confused as to why the sun wasn't up and where her friend was. It was a confusing time for her. And Raymond himself had just had brain surgery for a stroke. So Leela's son, rightfully so, was like, "Mom, let me drive you. We'll make a day of it. I'll take you. Please let me take you." And she's like, "No, don't worry about it. It's only a 15-minute drive. We do this every year. It'll be fine." they left that morning to go to the festival, and their family never heard from them again. So the family frantically began looking when they didn't return home that night. They drove the drove up and down the road to try to find them, see if they were in a ditch, if they had car trouble, if they were in an accident, if they needed help, if they had a medical emergency, calling hospitals, doing everything they can to try to find their family. Finally, 4 days later, on July 2nd, the Austin American Statesman, which is the big paper here, ran an article that was titled, "Elderly Salado Couple Missing on Trip to Nowhere." It read, "Leela and Raymond Howard are on a 4-day trip into thin air. The Central Texas couple, in their 80s with diminishing health, somehow have turned a 15-mile journey for a cup of coffee and a party into a 500-mile-plus misadventure with no known destination." That was the article that the singer of Fastball found and wrote the song about. The only signs along the journey were a stop at Walmart for coffee on the way to the festival, and on July 2nd, when Leela was stopped by Arkansas police officers in rural Arkansas, about 500 miles away, for driving with her lights off at night. The deputy said she seemed confused, and she told the deputy that she was trying to get back to Texas, but they were heading in the opposite direction. So he tried to give them directions and sent them on their way. And then that was the last anybody had heard of them. So on July 12th, their car was found at the bottom of a ravine in Arkansas. Raymond was in the car, deceased, and Leela was found 20 feet away, holding onto her purse and her car keys as if she crawled away to get help, but ended up dying of her injuries. Police say there were no skid marks on the road, which indicated that she didn't see the cliff or that she was confused and just drove over it without stopping, without trying to brake or anything like that. And it shows that they went straight off the cliff at 50 miles per hour. Scalzo came across the article before they had been found, and he said of the song, quote, "It's a romanticized take on what happened." Scalzo said he pictured them taking off to have fun like they did when they first met. That is episode 11. We're all set. Little bit of news, because this happened literally as I was recording, and I want to share it with you because I am so ecstatic. I got an email back from Apple. It's going to be in the iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever they're calling it these days. It's going to be there within 24 hours. I am super excited. This has been something I've been working on and fighting for since I started this thing. I am so relieved right now. It is such good news. I can rest a little bit today. So that's going to happen within 24 hours. Thank you to Michael and Jasmine at Apple. You guys are my heroes today. You have no idea. This is the first time anybody's responded for months and given me some kind of feedback that I could use. Thank you. So expect that in 24 hours. Also, fun little bonus, guys, that I told you would be at the end of the episode. On Twitter, at CoffinCast with a capital C, I will have a playlist on Spotify for episode 11. God, I'm such a mess today. I was so excited, and now I'm blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I will have a playlist for episode 11 that will have the 4 songs that were featured. Also, it'll have other songs that are based on crimes or stories that you may not have known about or mysteries. That way you can do your own detective work to find out what this song is about, what's the story behind it. Or maybe later on I'll do another episode with some of the songs that are on there and go in depth. But, you know, do your own detective work. See what it's like to be me for a day, guys. And all the work I put in it for you. because you're my friends, my coffin cast friends. So yeah, also I'm working on a Discord channel or a server. I mean, I don't play games under the Coffin Cast banner, but I mean, Discord can be used just to chat. I have one fellow podcaster on there. I'd love some other fellow podcasters as well. I'd love some listeners on there as well. I'd love to talk to you guys and interact with you, because I'm lonely. So talk to me. So you can find me on social media, Twitter, at CoffinCast with a capital C at the beginning. Also on Instagram, CoffinCastPod. I'm not on there a lot because I don't understand it. Also on Facebook, there's a CoffinCast page. I'm not a fan of it. I barely look at it because it's just the way it looks on my end is just gross, and I prefer Twitter because it's easy. Also, I'm on Podchaser, like I said, so go to podchaser.com and rate me. That sounded weird. I'm going to emphasize the T. Rate me, please. Thank you. So that's it for this week's episode. I will not be putting one out this Friday because I'm, like I said, I'm experimenting to see what happens. If it doesn't work out, I will put one on a week from this Friday. If it does work out, I'll do it again on Monday. So thank you in advance. I appreciate you guys. If I've missed anything, if I've messed up anything, hit me up on Twitter and let me know. Be nice about it, though. And I will definitely give you a shout out on a future episode if I need to do some updates. Haven't gotten any updates or corrections yet. Waiting for them. So hit me up there and let me know. Also, that is it. There is no also. I don't know what I'm talking about. So that's it, guys. So just a reminder, life is a dream walking, but death is going home. Stay safe out there.